Money, Riches, and Wealth is sponsored by the Financial Consulate.
Say you don't need no diamond rings, and I'll be satisfied. Tell me that you want the kind of things the money just can't buy. I don't care too much for money. Money can buy me love.
This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. Time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
And this is Drew Tignanelli here at Money, Riches, and Wealth. I'm here tonight with my co-host, Christopher John O'Shea.
Yes, sir. Good to be with you. It's been a few weeks.
Yeah, it has. You always disappear on me every so often, but that's okay.
Still pop up, though.
You leave me with some other good guests to, or good co-hosts to talk with. And but tonight, Chris, we're on an open show, so our listeners are our guests tonight, and we're going to address their questions and anything that they want to talk about. It's the topic of tonight. And you might have a topic that you say, hey, if you can help answer this question, this would be really helpful to me. And to do that, it's 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question, lead the conversation tonight. And always keep in mind, there's somebody out there that wants to hear your question asked, but they're too, you know, just not their thing to call into a radio station, ask a question on air. So maybe you'll do it for them, 410-922-6680 if you want to call in. You know, Chris, last week seemed to be the breaking point for a lot of people. They just couldn't handle the volatility and and they just had to get out and they've sold and, you know, and then usually it turns out that, you know, you might be right for a week, you might be right for a month, you might be right for 2 months or 3 months or whatever the case may be. But ultimately, if you don't get back in at the right time, you're not going to be right at all, you know. And I still talk to people that sold out in 2009 and never got back in, you know.
Sure.
I mean, just think about that.
Yep.
You know, they locked in a 40 or 50% loss and then never got back in because they figured the world's coming to hell in a handbag. Or people who sold out in 2020 thinking we were going into a worldwide depression because of the pandemic and never got back in. And now they're sitting back after years of thinking they did something horrible. Now they're saying, okay, well, maybe I made a good decision because the world is coming to an end, you know. And they still won't get back in, you know. And, you know, here's the point. The point is, Chris, that volatility is important if you want to make a higher than treasury bill rate of return. If you want to make more than 1%, which is what the treasury bill pays, you have to accept volatility. In other words, prices can go up and prices can go down. But you have to have sound reasoning as to why you own that volatility.
Yeah.
And
sure. That's good. That's a great point. We can follow up a little bit more on that. We've got two calls. We've got Lee in Washington.
Wait a minute. I was rambling, Chris.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but I was just trying to gracefully just transition there.
All right. Go to
Lee. What do you want to do, Drew?
Lee.
You want to go to Lee? All right.
Yeah.
Let's go to Lee. Hi, Lee. Welcome to the show. What can we do for you?
I'm thinking about renting in Florida for over 6 months next year, and I'm wondering if would there be any state of Maryland income tax savings potential.
Do you work in Maryland or do you work in Florida?
Oh, I can work remotely.
Well, you know, just being 6 months in Florida is not make you a Floridian and doesn't deny Maryland income tax on your money. So
yeah,
if you're working. What's that?
Good. And he said he was just renting, going to rent, right?
Yeah, and he said just going to rent.
Yeah.
In order to be a Floridian and tell Maryland that you don't owe them income taxes on the money, you have to change your residency to Florida. You have to vote in Florida. You have to change your driver's license to Florida. You got to re-register your cars to Florida. You've got to change your heart to be a Floridian, no longer a Marylander. And if you go back to Maryland and sit in your house and work remotely, Maryland gets, even if you can prove that you're a Floridian, 6 months of the year, Maryland would get the income tax on the earnings that you make remotely while you're sitting in Maryland for the other 6 months of the year. So that's the best case scenario, but I don't even think, based on what you're saying, would be, I wouldn't defend you against the state of Maryland if you asked me to, because it doesn't sound like you've changed your heart to Florida yet.
Okay, so basically snowbirds don't get any benefits tax-wise.
They don't get any benefits tax-wise if all they're thinking of, Lee, is I'm going to go down there and live 6 months in one day, and then I'm going to tell Maryland I don't owe them any income tax. And that does not work, okay? Snowbirds will get an advantage if they come down here and live and they vote here and they drive their driver's license in here, but they happen to have a place in Maryland where they're at 4 months or 4.5 months of the year, and it's really just a place to go and get away from the heat, let's say, and visit some family up there or something like that. Now they could be a full Floridian, and they would have a substantial income tax benefit.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Great, thanks, Lee. Right. Thanks for calling.
But you know what he's talking about, Chris?
All right, we're
at
6:14, Drew.
I'm going to say this, and then we'll go and we'll take our call, our next card. We're on an open show, 410-922-6680. But I want to make sure everyone heard what I was talking about with Lee. There's a false rumor that all you have to do is live 6 months and one day in another state, and you're now only paying taxes to that state. That is not how it works. Don't believe that's how it works. And learn the rules as to do it and do it right. Go ahead, Chris. Where do you want to go? Traffic, right?
That's a great point, Drew.
We're going to traffic.
We are Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we will be right back.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., doing what a personal financial advisor should do. Is your personal financial advisor your tax expert? Is your financial advisor able to guide your estate plan? Is your financial advisor able to help with college planning, retirement planning, mortgages, Medicare, Social Security, company benefits, or as a comprehensive advisor to business owners? Is your financial advisor independent from brokerage firms or insurance companies? Is your financial advisor unable to take commissions or referral fees in direct conflict of their professional relationship with you? Is your advisor a fiduciary working in your best interest? Despite the commissions and fees you pay, you're unable to answer one question: yes. Do our financial physical and experience the difference. We are so confident that the financial physical is unconditionally guaranteed. To learn more, call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth here with Christopher John O'Shea. We're on an open show. Plenty of lines open. I have Washington on the line. We're going to go to him in a second or two. But if you want to get online, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680 is the way to get online and ask your question, because there's no such thing as a bad question. Lee had a great one earlier about how to live in Maryland and somewhere else, you know, part-time. I don't know what Washington's going to ask, but maybe he's got a different concept to go with. But if you want to get online, 410-922-6680. And Chris,
let's go.
Bring old Washington on.
Yes. Washington, hi, how are you?
Hello, Chris. How are you and Drew?
We're doing well. Yes,
well,
thanks.
Great, Washington. Good to talk to you. What's your question, my friend?
Right, you're familiar with collision damage waiver that auto rental companies try to sell you to take out?
Yep.
All right. Now, if you have a collision on your insurance, is there a reason to drop collision and just go with CDW, or it's usually better to go ahead and go with keeping the collision on your insurance, even if you believe it can lower your costs? Because is there something we don't know, like maybe the auto companies find ways to not cover you under CDW?
CDW, tell me what your acronym means.
Collision damage waiver.
Okay, so you're talking about if I rent a rental car, I don't have to take their auto insurance because it's already covered under my own policy. That's what you're asking, right?
Yes.
Okay. And so your question is, should I take it with the rental company or should I save my money and just assume that it's covered under my own policy, right?
Well, no. Actually, I'm coming up to where I have to renew my auto insurance. And one of the ways that some of the insurance companies try to save me money is to quote me to drop collision and just keep liability. But I don't know if one of the things that's going on is while CDW sounds cheap, if they don't want to pay you because they find a way in order to not pay out, then
the only reason you would drop
is way to go.
Right. The only reason you're going to drop your collision coverage on your auto is because your collision coverage on your auto isn't a lot of collision coverage. I mean, in other words, you got a car that was 2005 and it's got 340,000 miles on it. And if you ever have an accident, the most they're ever going to give you is $500 or $1,000. And it, you know, it might be when you factor in the deductible, you're hardly going to get anything back. But that would be the only time I would encourage a client to get rid of their collision coverage.
Okay. In your experience or your knowledge, is if you don't have collision and you go ahead and take CDW, do the insurance companies usually go ahead and say, okay, well, we'll take care of it? Or is there something I need to really be aware of?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question. So what you're asking is if I've dropped collision on my auto policy and now I go rent a rental car, do I have collision coverage under that rental car through my auto policy, even though I don't have collision anymore on my personal car? And I tell you the truth, I've never had to address that. You know, I've always had collision on my cars and I've always done it. And I've never had to address it with a client. I can easily find out for you, though.
Right. CDW is relatively inexpensive because they charge it per day sort of thing. But it's like one of those things of, yeah, it sounds cheap until maybe you try to go ahead and file a claim. And then it's like, well, okay, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. And then it's going to be more hassle and it's worth than just going ahead and just keeping collision on your auto policy. And if you have a good insurance company, they usually would just cover you anyway.
Well, now, keep in mind, Washington, that there is a reason why you'd want to take collision and comprehensive on the rental car with the rental car company. And the reason that you might want to consider that, and it depends on your liquidity and your financial well-being, is that if I have an accident with a rental car and I waive the collision coverage on the rental policy, okay, and I now have to go back to my company to make the claim, the rental insurance company could ask me to come up with $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 or whatever until my company would come through. So I might have a significant amount of cash that I have to come up with to the rental car company before my auto insurance company comes through. Now, if you have the liquidity to do something like that, if God forbid it were to happen, you know, then it's not an issue to waive the rental car. But if you don't have the opportunity to come up with that, now you've got to negotiate with the rental car company, hold them off until you can get your company to pay the collision and the cost of the damage and so forth.
So
you see where I'm coming from?
Yes.
Yeah. So Drew in Washington, we have Dave calling in, who says he has an answer. I'm guessing it's for this question.
All right. Well, see you, Washington. You listen, and we'll listen to Dave.
Right. Thank you.
Okay. All great. Right. All right. Thanks.
We've only got a couple minutes, Chris. Let's go.
Understood. Okay. Let's.
Dave.
Hey.
Hello, Dave. Welcome. Thanks for calling.
Hey. The way that I looked into this some years ago, I did not have collision coverage because I had old vehicles, which, just like you said, Drew, they're just not worth. You're not going to get any money if you wreck it. When I went to rent a vehicle, I used my credit card. A lot of the credit cards will cover the collision Or actually, they cover above and beyond what your current auto policy does not cover. And since I didn't have collision coverage, I paid for it with the credit card. One of the things you got to make sure is at the end of the rental, you make sure that you do not decide to pay cash. You stick with the credit card, because when you turn that vehicle in, if somehow they come back and say, oh, we found there was a problem with the vehicle, a scratch or a dent, that way your credit card will cover it.
Yeah, you're right that there are a lot of credit cards, but now you've got to be very specifically sure that your credit card will do that. American Express is well known for doing that.
Yes, and I always, anytime I got a different credit card, I always checked on that. Now, there is one other concern. I don't know how many states have this one issue, but Arizona is one of them. And that is, if the vehicle is damaged while you're renting it, you are responsible for the loss of time that they can rent the car out to someone else.
Oh, wow.
That's not covered by the insurance. So you've got to be careful when you go to rent a car. I forget what they call that, but I found that out when I went to rent one in Arizona, and I didn't find it out till I got to the desk to actually get the keys.
Right. Wow. That's an interesting point. Never thought about that one, you know. So, great points, Dave. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Okay.
Great.
Take care.
Yeah, thanks for calling in.
All right.
So, we're on an open show tonight, Chris. 410-922-6680 if you want to call in and ask a question. You know, I actually had a weird experience at a Budget here in Baltimore last time I was there. I brought the car back Sunday, went to the airport, got in the, airplane, flew home. And 3 days later, Budget sent me a bill for double what my rental agreement was, and they claimed that I didn't return the car until Tuesday.
Wow.
And it took me a lot of effort to prove to them that I didn't keep that car for two more days. They were the worst customer service I've ever experienced in my entire life, period.
All right. Well, we will come back to follow up on pieces of that, but Money Versus Wealth, we will be right back.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and we're on an open show tonight, and we just had a great discussion about rental cars and insurance on rental cars. We do have a couple more answers in line exactly with what Dave was talking about. But if you want to get online, 410-922-6680, there is one person online, but we'll be going to them in a second, Chris. But you had some of the stats there that if you don't have collision on your car, then it doesn't carry forward to collision on a rental car. I assumed that was correct, but I never actually went and proved it one way or another. But your credit card can cover it. You just have to be careful. Credit card companies have limitations normally, like they don't like more than 15 days that you're renting the car, and they don't like it at all if you're driving it out of the country. Matter of fact, a lot of auto insurance policies cover you if you ever take your car into Mexico. A lot of cars don't cover you if you do that.
Yeah, as they said, it said a lot of countries will, but not all.
Right.
And then trucks or vans are typically frowned upon in the U.S.
So it's an interesting topic. Someday we ought to do a full show on that. I bet you could do a full show on it. And I do want to reiterate, Chris, that worst customer service I've ever experienced, Avis and Budget. Avis Budget is the same company, so those are off my list. Wow. And I don't know if anybody else out there's had a horrible experience with these people, but I've never experienced such poor customer service. And actually wanting me to pay double for who knows what reason. And they're just that poor. Anyway, if you have a question, 410-922-6680. Let's go to our caller, Chris.
I was going to tell you, when I was used Fox in Florida, they wanted to sell everywhere. I had to wait for 10 minutes a couple times, the people in front of us, because they were trying to sell them the Sunshine Pass. All right, we've got Gary and then Bobby. Let's go to Gary. Gary, welcome to the show.
Hey, Drew, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Question for you about life estate deeds with powers.
Right.
Let's suppose I have a life estate deed with powers on my house. I'm older.
Okay.
And
okay.
My two daughters are the, I guess, beneficiaries, if you call
okay.
it that. And if I pass away and still own the property, do my beneficiaries get a step up in basis for the property?
So let's explain to rest of our listeners what a step up in basis is. So let's say Gary bought his house for $200,000 and he dies and his house is worth $600,000. His daughters would get a step up in basis, and in essence, they would inherit the house with a $600,000 cost basis that if they sold it immediately for $600,000, they would have no gain whatsoever. Whereas if Gary would have sold
it a week... No taxable gain, right?
No taxable gain, whereas Gary sold it a week before, he would have had a $400,000 capital gain. That's what he's asking. And the answer to your question is, Gary, is if the life estate fully retains all the powers to you to mortgage it, to sell it, et cetera, but upon your death it goes to your daughter, yes, they get a step up in basis. But if you only have the right to live there, and all the powers have been shifted to your daughters, then it's technically a gift, and you would not get a step up in most situations.
That would be considered a life estate deed without powers.
Yeah. That's correct. That would be a good way to put it. Life estate deed without powers, yes.
Okay.
But no, you normally a life estate deed leaves the powers in the hands of the original owner, and therefore they almost will get a step up in basis.
Yeah, that's what I have. Two quick questions about car rental insurance.
Yep.
My understanding is that if you use your credit card, that is considered a secondary coverage. So if you have coverage on your own automobile insurance policy for collision or whatever, that the
that's primary.
Credit card, yeah, still wants your insurance company to cover it.
Yeah, but if you don't carry the collision, now the credit card company covers the whole thing. So that's what Dave was saying.
Yeah, I think that's right, but. But, yeah, okay. And the other thing is there is something called loss of utilization or something to that effect, so that the credit card company can charge you more than just the collision damage because they've lost that asset as far as renting it and getting income. So
yeah, he was talking about that, but only certain states allow them to do that.
Okay.
He was talking about in Arizona, that's one state that allows them to charge you for the loss of use of the car you damaged that they were making income off. But not every state allows them to do that.
Okay.
So you just got to check that out. Good point.
Great points, though, Gary. Oh. Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
All right, bye.
Good stuff. We're getting our audiences
educating us
a little bit here.
You know,
right?
I like
this
that.
Is good
know?
Stuff. Okay, we've got Bobby. We've got a few minutes, but I think we can fit this in. Hi, Bobby. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I have a question about burial plots.
Okay.
I have inherited 4 burial plots from my parents.
Okay.
And I would like to sell them, and I want to know if I'm involved with any taxes.
You could be. It depends on when your parents left them to them. How many years ago?
Well, they were purchased in the 50s.
When did they leave them to you? When did they pass away, in essence, is what I'm asking. The last of them.
In 91.
91. So the answer to the question is, whatever the value of those lots were at the time that you inherited them, minus whatever you could sell them for today, you would have a capital gain on that. So let's say the lots were worth $2,000 in 1991, and you sell them for $6,000 today, you would have a $4,000 per lot gain. That's the way that would work.
Okay, and that money's based on what I would get, you know, when I offered them for sale,
as opposed to what
the... cemetery charges for them.
Well, whatever money you get, that's what's going to make the determination, Bobby. So if you go to the cemetery and say, hey, will you resell these for me? And they say, yeah, we'll resell them for you. We're going to get $6,000 a piece. But you, Bobby, we're going to keep 2 and we're only going to give you 4. Then your parents died that it was worth 2. You only got 4. Then your gain's only 2. whatever the cemetery kept, that's their business. You don't have to pay taxes on what they kept. Am I making that clear?
Yes, but when I talked to the cemetery about it, they will handle the paperwork but will not get involved in the sale whatsoever. And when I asked them about taxes, they said that there was zero taxes involved in this type of transaction.
Well, I don't know what they mean, but when you said taxes to them, I don't know what kind of taxes they were referring to. Maybe they thought you meant transfer taxes, like when you sell a piece of...
No, I specifically said, what am I going to owe on my tax return, my IRS return?
You know, if you inherit the properties... Now, if, you know, if... you know, if you sell the properties and you know, nobody makes any recording of it, you know, and you don't ever pay taxes on it, the IRS is never going to know. But that's not the way the tax laws work. So I don't know what the cemetery was saying. But anything, if you buy a bicycle for $100 and next month or two, a bicycle becomes the most popular bicycle in America and somebody's willing to pay you $200 for that bicycle, you owe income tax on that $100 gain on the sale of that bicycle. So same's true with cemetery plots. I don't know any income tax exemption for cemetery plots. All right?
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, Bobby, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Yeah, anybody else on line right now, Chris?
We do not.
Okay, you know, I don't know any exemption on cemetery plots. If you buy it, if I sold the cemetery plots I have in Delaney Memorial Gardens, I don't think I get a income tax-free ride if I sell it for more than what they were worth when they were given to me.
Sure, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if there was an exclusion in tax codes somewhere, but I don't know of any either.
Yep. So... anyway, we're on an open show tonight, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask your question, a lot of great questions tonight.
Yeah,
and any topic, like Bobby just called in and talked about selling funeral.
Yeah, we've got a wide range of topics tonight, so that's great. Yeah,
wide range.
So we'll, you know, so call, get on the line. We for our last segment of the show, 410-922-6680, and all lines are open, but we will be back soon. We are Money, Riches, and Wealth.
This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, Wednesday nights at 6 p.m., doing what a personal financial advisor should do. Is your personal financial advisor your tax expert? Is your financial advisor able to guide your estate plan? Is your financial advisor able to help with college planning, retirement planning, mortgages, Medicare, Social Security, company benefits, or as a comprehensive advisor to business owners? Is your financial advisor independent from brokerage firms or insurance companies? Is your financial advisor unable to take commissions or referral fees in direct conflict of their professional relationship with you? Is your advisor a fiduciary working in your best interest? Despite the commissions and fees you pay, you're unable to answer one question: yes. Do our financial physical and experience the difference. We are so confident that the financial physical is unconditionally guaranteed. To learn more, call 410-823-SAVE, 410-823-SAVE, or financialphysical.com.
Now back to more of Money, Riches, and Wealth on Talk Radio 680 WCBM.
We're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. The lines are full. Now we've got to roll. Let's go, Chris.
Let's do that. We've got Robert up first. Robert, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
So what's your question?
I had a question. I have, from prior employers, I have the majority of my savings is in 403B accounts. And this year I'm going to have a new job. And I have a small amount of 1099 income on the side, probably in the range of $15,000. And I'm wondering about the advantages or disadvantages of opening a solo 401k for my 1099 income and then rolling all of my prior 403Bs into that account.
Well, we do that a lot, and we like that a lot. There's nothing wrong with it. Always keep in mind, though, 26,000 is the max. Or how old are you? Are you under 50 or over 50?
Under 50.
20,500 is the maximum employee contribution you can do from all employers, including your solo 401k. If you put 15,000 in your solo 401k as a employee contribution, you would only be able to do another 5,500 at any other employer that you work at. And you just have to make sure you don't make that mistake, because that's one the IRS monitors.
Is there a total limit of like 60? Is it 60 or $61,000 is total? But some of that can
No. The only limit you have to worry about is the 20,500 employee contribution, because that's a limit amongst all employers. Okay. The 60,000 limit is a 60. Actually, I think it is 60,000 right. This year, even for people under 50. The 60,000 limit is per employer. So you're not going to exceed that.
Employer?
What's that?
I can't count myself as an employer.
Your solo 401k would be an employer. So if you made $250,000 as a solo self-employed person, and you made $200,000 at another company and $200,000 at another company, you could get $60,000 contributed to each of those three 401k, 403b, and solo 401k plans. But your employee portion could never be more than $20,500 in the combination of all three.
Okay, got it.
See, because the employee contribution could be 100% of pay up to $20,500, okay? The employer contribution could be no more than 25% of pay, or if you're self-employed, 18.9%. It's the technical reason why it's 18.9. The employer contribution can be no more than 18.9% of self-employed or 25% of pay of an employer. So if you make a couple hundred thousand dollars, you could get the full $60,000 strictly as an employer contribution if they're willing to do it. I don't know if I'm making this clear to you.
Yeah, I think he's got it.
Okay, yes. Cool.
Great.
All right, thank you so much.
Hey, great. Thank you. All right, we've got several more calls. We want to get to them. So we've got David. And see, hey, David, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Good.
Great also.
Very good.
What can we do for you?
Yeah. Real quick, I'll give you a thumbnail sketch, and then you can fill in some of the blanks. But I'm starting to look into a situation. My wife has terminal cancer. I have my residence, which is a small farm, and my son bought the farm next to us. I only owe probably about $50,000. The property's worth probably about $800,000. We blew through a lot of money, so I don't have a lot of asset or protection at this point. However, our son is that's the only person that would inherit it, and I basically would like to, in my mind, he's going to get the property, so I'd like to basically let him have the property and then create something along the line where he takes care. I had to start back up and working. I started a business, but take care of me. But more important, take care of my wife in case I die before she does. So I don't know where to start as far as what to do with my property.
Well, you know, that's
where to start.
Yeah. That's a difficult question to answer, because keep in mind what we talked about earlier, if you were listening, about the step up in cost basis on property. So if you give that property to your son during your lifetime, whatever you paid for that property is the cost basis he'll have in that property. So what did you pay for the property?
I paid $140,000.
What's it probably worth today?
$800,000. I bought it like 32 years ago.
Right. So you've got a massive gain in that. And if you sell the property or you die and leave it to him, there probably would be very little or any capital gains on the sale of the property. But, so I would not be giving it away to the son. I would try to look for other strategies to get it to work for everyone where you get the tax benefits out of it. And, I don't have enough detail. You ought to go meet with somebody who has the ability to sit down and think this out with you to come up with a great tax and estate strategy, you know, so that it will pass to your son and under the most economic condition. But I think what you're thinking about also is you want to make sure it's protected from Medicaid if you or your wife need long-term care, right?
Correct.
Yeah. And
that's,
so there's,
I mean, that's one of the ingredients, yes.
That's one of the ingredients. And here's the problem, right? It's the push and the shove. If I protect too much against long-term care, which may not happen, but it may happen, and it could be really devastating, I'm going to condemn the property to long-term capital gains because of that $700,000 gain I have sitting there. And if I give it away to the son, he's going to be condemned to paying that someday in the future. And somehow or another, it would be better to try to come up with a strategy where you can take advantage of lots of pieces of different things, try to get the full tax benefits, but also know that you have a strategy that would take care of the long-term care piece. I don't know that I have an answer over the phone like this, but I'm saying that's what I would be thinking about if you had
What type of person would I look for? Because this is the problem. Most people, like financial planners, and you know, they took a course and they know how to sell stock, and you know, that's about it. It's hard to really find somebody.
Well, that's why we do this show. That's why we do this show, is to demonstrate what we believe a true professional advisor should do, is they should be able to answer any of these questions for a client. And normally you're going to find that through NAPFA advisors, N-A-P-F-A, National Association.
N-A-P-F-A, okay.
National Association Personal Financial Advisors, NAPFA.
Okay.
And those people normally would be able to do this. Now, some of them won't talk to you unless you're willing to invest $1 million with them or $500,000 or something.
Right.
But there's a lot of them that will do it, and they have the training and the expertise and the comprehensive knowledge to do it for you. I know we would do it for you if you wanted us to.
Well, I'm in Maryland. I mean, where do I reach out?
We're in Hunt Valley.
Oh, great. Okay. That's
now, fine. I personally am in Amelia Island, Florida. But
he appears in our Zoom room, though.
I kind of come in like Mr. Wizard.
He's life size.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So anyway.
All right. So your office could handle a conversation about this.
Yes, we could definitely do it. And a lot of times, you know, if the situation is such, there's a lot of situations where we'll do it under a special circumstance for the people, because we want to help them in what they're doing, you
right.
know, what they're dealing with.
Yeah, and
with.
I don't mind paying a fee. I mean, nothing's free in this world, but
no, I understand.
Know,
I just
kind of don't know where to go. That's been my biggest problem.
If you came and met with us, we would make sure that you leave there understanding what your best course of action is, all right?
Okay, well, then I'm going to do that, so I'll wait for your number unless you have it handy.
410-823-SAVE, S-A-V-E, easy way to remember that, 410-823-SAVE.
And Jerry, I'll get Perfect. You off the air if you want me to answer your question. Anyone else who's on the phone? Drew?
All right, this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.
Show them the way you feel. Things are gonna be much better.